But then other times you go and they're not looking and you hide treasures in their digging spot.
Yeah.
So that they go there first to go find their goodies. And then eventually that's going to become their spot.
She's very motivated by food. Mm-hmm. She likes she likes snacks. So if you give her a snack, she's really happy.
So
And she'll do anything you want at that point.
So then you should have it easy.
Yeah.
And just FYI, I live with a rabbit with two terriers.
Okay.
So, yeah, so they're family.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's very much. Outside is different. But
I didn't know a terrier was a hunting dog today. I didn't know that they were.
Well, they're bred to, like, to get
hunt
vermin.
Small game.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go to ground. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Did your family get a new member during the holidays? One that's furry and likes to bark and wags its tail when you come through the door? A dog can bring a lot of joy, but there's also a lot of extra responsibility and work. A new dog or puppy needs time to adjust, and along the way there can be accidents, aggression, and plenty of anxiety to go around. Joining us to answer your questions about dog training are Paws Look Listen owner Nick Hoff, Training Tracks co-owner Mel Bussey Silverman, Dog Abilities owner Day Groden, and Underdog Canine Academy owner Dara Williams. And this is National Train Your Dog Month, and if you have any questions about how to do that, give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dara, Nick, Mel, Dave, good to see everybody this afternoon. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's start off by talking about why is it important, Dara, to train a dog? I mean, what are the benefits of doing this as opposed to just, you know, the dog comes in the house and lives with you?
Well, an untrained dog, a lot of the times, creates a lot of frustrations between owner and dog. And when you have a trained dog, it really makes for a great, rich relationship. There are expectations that are met by the dog from the owner. And it creates more, a deeper relationship between the two. So it's very rewarding.
Okay, so it's a way of forming a bond between
Absolutely.
Dog and owner. And
Absolutely.
Nick, what do you see as being some of the benefits for dog and owner?
I definitely agree with Dara. To me, some of the biggest benefits to training our dog is that it helps to reduce the stress that both we and our dogs can feel. And so when we work with our dogs to communicate with them, which is really what training is all about, it's about communication. Mm-hmm. And so when we do this with our dogs, we help to reduce the stress that can come along with having them by setting expectations and helping to teach our dogs exactly what we want them to do and how to do it. And this allows us to be able to also enjoy our lives much more normally. So when we have a well-behaved dog, you're going to feel much more comfortable inviting over a guest as opposed to saying, oh, I'm just going to meet you outside or I'll meet you there. So by training your dog, you help to open up the possibilities for what you can do with your dog, whether directly by going out to the park and such, or by just having guests over to your home.
And Mel, I would take it that means more freedom for the dog as well, and more possibilities for the dog if it's better trained.
Absolutely. I agree with everything that Nick and Dara have said so far, and it's all about the communication. And when you train the dog, you two learn to understand each other, and you learn to have a dialogue. And it makes for such a richer relationship that you're not just mad and frustrated at the dog all the time. You're like, okay, I understand you, and I know how to reach you and tell you what to do. And the dog is less frustrated because they have clear guidance from you. And when your dog is very trained, you can take them everywhere. That allows dogs, you know, and a well-trained dog will stay focused on you in public and won't be jumping on other people or barking at other dogs or grabbing items off shelves, and you feel proud to take your dog's places, and you just develop such a deep relationship. The closer you work with your dog, the closer you're going to be, and the more you and the dog both are going to reap the benefits.
And Dave, can training a dog be a lifesaver for the dog?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, all training, I always feel like it's based on good foundations. So some great just basic training like recall, for example, having a dog come to you, I mean, that can definitely save a dog's life, whether they're out in the street or they're in a public place. You know, having them come to you, you want them to do that. Even having them have a stay, you know, so that they don't DoorDash or anything like that. They're not going to run out into the road or get hit by a car, anything like that. So it's really important that we do train our dogs. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an elaborate process where they have to know a lot of different tricks. But just having that good, solid, basic foundation behaviors is really important, and it's going to keep your dog safe.
What's a good way to do that recall training? How do you get a dog to come? Because I have this new terrier in my house, and she just kind of stares at me like, what are you saying? What are you trying to do, get me to do here?
So with recall, when I'm talking to clients about it, I look at it as you've got to teach the dog that coming to you is worthwhile. Okay. A lot of dogs, it's not always going to be an intrinsic thing where they're like, I'm just going to come to you because I absolutely love you. So sometimes we have to use some of those external motivations. You know, we'll use some treats. We might use toys. We're going to certainly use pets, praise, anything that they like. And we want to reward that every time so that they understand that each time we call them, they're going to get a reward somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Nick and Mel, you two wanted to weigh in on this also? Okay.
Most certainly, yeah. So there are a variety of little tips and tricks that we can use with recall training specifically. So one of my personal favorites is if we're having trouble in an emergency kind of situation where our dog has gotten away or is in a potentially compromising situation and we need to get them to come, a little trick that I often talk to my clients about is I teach them to get their dog's attention. Just get your dog to give you a moment of attention by saying their name, making a funny noise, so that your dog looks at you. And then the moment that they do, run away from your dog. I absolutely love this one.
Okay.
Because what it does is it elicits a game of chase from your dog, and it reverses what you would be trying to do. Because very frequently, the common thing that people want to do when their dogs run away and it's not listening is chase after the dog. Well, dogs love a good game of chase. And so this way, you are actually the one being chased. So I get my dog's attention, get them to look at me, and then I just take off away from them. Certainly look back and make sure they're coming after you. But then allow your dog to come and get you, and then praise them for doing so. And so that can be a real fun, quick emergency way to do it. It's not a replacement for actual training. So if you have to do that, that tells you that you should be working with your dog much more regularly on that. But that's a great little tip to help in an emergency.
And we love the runaway recall game, like Nick has just described. One of the things we do prior to that is we do a lot of practice when we're out and about with our dogs and even in the yard is both basically what we call the eye contact game. If we're out on a hike or in the yard, every time the dog checks in, we're going to mark and reward with something the dog likes. Maybe it's a toy, maybe it's a goodie, maybe it's something else. But the more we do that, the more the dog is going to automatically check in because it pays off. Then the next thing we do is we play the name game. And everywhere we go with the dog, is in the house, in the yard, as often as we can find a way to work it into our schedules, we call the dog's name once because we want them to listen the first time. And then as soon as they look, we'll say yes and give them a cookie or something else they really like. And the more you can fit this in throughout the day, the more automatic that response comes. And if you can do this enough, you create a response that's so conditioned the dog doesn't choose. They just automatically do it. Because if they don't look to their name, they're probably not going to see you running away or come when they're called. So this adds a lot to the recall game as well. And I like to surprise dogs on walks and hikes with the recall game. I'll call them normally a lot, give them a lot of cookies, let them go back to what they're doing. But then randomly I'll just call and I'll just book it. And they'll go, woo, and they'll come chase me. And if you do this enough, they'll hear the word come. They'll assume that you are running away from them. So they're going to turn fast. And while they're turning, they're gathering to run fast because that's what you want is a really fast recall. Mm-hmm. So we really love this as an addition to recall training.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to add to Mel and Nick that I also use like a leash, and it could be even like a 15-footer leash. And I'll ask them to come to me, but I'll shuffle really fast back so it promotes them to chase after you. And then I stop and have them sit in front of me and I praise them. I give them a lot of praise. Mm-hmm. I don't always use treats, but I always give a lot of praise and I really amp it up because they worked hard to do it.
So. 513-419-7100 if you have any questions about dog training. And let's talk to Levi. Good afternoon, Levi.
Hello.
Hello, go right ahead.
Yeah. By saying I have three dogs, each one of them is a found dog that I found separate occasion, and they were older dogs when I found them. So I've kind of, I'm very, because I know that at least one of them was abused, I tend to be a little more free with the dogs to let them be dogs. But my question is this, because I have friends who also have dogs. Is it possible to overtrain a dog? I have a friend who has the dog so trained, the dog is not acting like a dog. It's more like a little puppet or a little tin soldier. And you can tell that it's not having any fun in its life. But I wonder, is it possible to overtrain a dog?
I think everyone at the table has an opinion about this one. So let's start with Dara. Yeah.
Well, I believe dogs are dogs, and they're also family members. And if you're killing a dog's joy without any rewards to the dog, that's not a dog anymore. That's not a dog.
So let your dog be a dog.
Absolutely.
Okay. Most certainly. So I would say, yes, there is the way to overtrain our dog. What I often talk to my clients about is I work specifically with pet dogs. I don't work with competition obedience or anything along those lines. So the dogs that I'm working with, we are teaching the owners and the dogs to enjoy the process that we are trying to do with them. This should be both a fun and pleasant experience for both dog and owner. And if someone is wanting to train their dog to that high level degree, unless they're doing competition obedience or something else where we need that high extreme level of precision, then it may be better to go for something like a robot dog.
Mm-hmm. Mel?
I agree with what these guys have said. You get a dog to enjoy life with that dog, not to be their, you know, overlord and have them do everything that you ask them to. Well, you do want them to do everything that you ask them to, but you want them to enjoy it. You want to form a relationship, and being the taskmaster and the dog not getting any joy out of it is no fun for either one. So you don't want to train the joy out of your dog. You definitely want to train for safety and for letting the dog fit into human society as much as is good for you and the dog. But, you know, let them do things. Let them sniff. Let them run. Let them be happy. Let them rip up toys. You know, let them enjoy their lives as dogs as well. And we talked about getting new puppies. And one of the things that people say, one of the most important things to teach my new puppy, teach the new puppy that you're fun, that you are awesome to be around, that you are generous, that you pay well, that you are completely worth listening to, and that you are the most exciting thing in the world.
Next is ice bed.
And if you're always punishing the dog, or the dog has to do this, you know, that you don't get that. But when your dog absolutely loves working with you and you love working with your dog, you can even reach those high levels of competition obedience. You can reach those high levels of performance, you know, with that. But you, if the dog doesn't have any joy in it, you kind of got to wonder, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. Also, something that sounds like there's a level of trust that you develop, mm-hmm. you develop between you and the dog.
Exactly. It's a relationship. Think of it as a bank account. Before you can take any withdrawals, you got to put in a bunch of money.
Yeah. Day?
I look at it too as, you know, our dogs in general live a pretty short lifespan. So I want to, you know, if when I bring a dog in, I want them to have fun with us. We should be building a relationship together. It's not just a one-way street. It's, you know, we have to, you know, it's both owner and dog. They both have to get benefit out of it. And if it's sort of like you're just sucking the joy out of that training, it's really not very fun for the dog at all. So that's kind of my viewpoint with it. I want to build this relationship together.
Mm-hmm. We will continue with our dog training experts, and you can join us 513-419-7100. Email us talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Support for Cincinnati Edition comes from the Johnson Foundation, a private grant-making foundation committed to creating a more vibrant urban core through community development and civic engagement. More information at johnson-foundation.org.
Support comes from the Epicurean Mercantile Company, a new urban grocery open daily 8 to 8 on Ray Street across from Finley Market. EMC offers carefully curated groceries, household staples, beer, wine, and fresh produce, plus freshly prepared entrees at the counter, an American bistro restaurant located inside. To learn more, visit emcotr.com. Support comes from Voltage, specializing in classic modern European designs for inspired living spaces for 28 years. The showroom at 3209 Madison Road in Oakley houses a beautiful display of ideas for every area of your home. Voltage now also features kitchens designed by the Italian manufacturer Verena. VoltageFurniture.com.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about dog training with Paws, Look, Listen owner Nick Hoff, Training Tracks co-owner Mel Bussey-Silverman, Dog Abilities owner Dave Groden, and Underdog Canine Academy owner Dara Williams. And you can join us with your questions, 513-419-7100. Email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got a tweet from Jay. And Jay wanted to know, he has a dog that keeps putting its paws on the counter. So he's wondering, how do you train the dog to keep its paws off the counter without using treats? Nick?
So teaching dogs not to countersurf is a little bit of a challenge because the most, for the most part, the dog's going to do that primarily when the owner is not around. And so we do have to do a lot to teach the dog to not go up to the counters when they're, when the owner is not present. So the first thing that I always recommend is you have to start out by keeping your counters clean. So whenever we're dealing with any kind of behavioral issue that we don't like from our dogs, we have to have a two-prong approach. One, we have to start with management to prevent them from practicing that behavior so that they're not continuing to rehearse it every single day. Because if you're working with your dog to teach them not to jump on the counters and then they're able to do it several times and get treats when you're not home, then that's problematic. So you have to teach the dog to not get anything by making it not worthwhile any longer. That's the first thing that I always recommend.
Day.
So one of the things I recommend a lot with counter surfing is I look at it as a general impulse control behavior. So if we're able to actually set that foundation behavior with learning how to control impulses, starting out with things like just leaving food alone, just in the dog's vicinity without it being on a counter, and really rewarding them for moving away from the food, looking to the owner, pretty much just ignoring that food, you know, it's going to pay off. Pets, praise, whatever, if you don't want to use treats. Then from there, I can build it up to having those type of enticing things that might be on the counter that the dog would want. And what I'm looking for is the dog is actually, I can see that moment that the dog is learning to control that impulse, wanting to get the food, but not doing it. So they're making the choice to come away from the food, ignoring it, coming to you, anything like that. And if you're able to practice that each time, the dog's going to learn that it's much better to come to you or do another behavior than to be going after that food. And besides, also, of course, what we have to do is management in general, as Nick said.
Yep. Mel, you were looking like, yes, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of other things I'd like to add to this great advice we've already heard. When it comes to management, you know, yes, you can keep your counters clean, which is really hard when you've got kids. But the more consistent you can be, the less the dog gets out of it. And if they jump up and get reinforced, you've just undone a whole lot of training. But if they jump up and get nothing, you know, they've practiced it, but they at least haven't gotten reinforced. So with management, not only would you keep your counters clean, but if you cannot watch the kitchen, I would highly suggest a baby gate or using an exercise pen, even if you take a big exercise pen and put it around the counter so they can't even think about doing it. And then you can get a baby video monitor. And you have the video monitor in the kitchen and you are in the other room and you're still watching your dog. So if they think about it and then decide not to, you can run in and praise and be all happy and throw a toy for them if you don't want to use food. Or you can run in and yell, off, off, and then simply praise quietly when they get their feet back on the ground. Because even if the dog's doing something wrong, when they get it right, we need to let them know via feedback. So if they get caught every single time, eventually that will diminish until they don't try it any longer.
And the baby gate thing, you're talking about prevention there, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Management.
How often is that just a good common sense tactic to use with a dog?
Always.
Yeah, management is always a really helpful first approach because the first thing that we need to make sure that we're doing is we're preventing our dog from misbehaving. Because every time your dog is rehearsing inappropriate behaviors, whether it's jumping up on the counters, whether it's jumping up on guests, whether it is pulling on the leash, every time your dog's able to rehearse these inappropriate behaviors, they get better and better at it. And so management in whatever form that takes is definitely one of the very first things we need to do. And that can be using a leash to prevent behavior. That can be using gates. That can be using a crate. We look at how can I stop my dog from doing this? And then the next question is, how do I teach my dog what I want them to do?
An alternate behavior.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was just going to add that, you know, trust and freedom needs to be earned by your dog. And sometimes we give them a little bit too much freedom too soon. And a lot of poor behaviors occur out of that. And the behaviors that occur behind your back are going to be one of the ones that are harder to eliminate. So you got to kind of pull back the reins on the freedom and trust and then build it up from there. So even for me, I tell people, you know, for the first couple of weeks of training, even up to 3 weeks, to have your dog on leash and collar in the household with you. You know, visual supervision. And it's not visual supervision as in I was in the same room as a dog and we were watching a movie and I don't know where Fido went to. No, I mean visual supervision. And if you can't visually supervise your dog at that time, it's not going to be mean to crate your dog at that time. Again, prevention over cure. Mm-hmm. And then also when your dog is out and you're able to expose your dog to those behaviors, desirable behaviors, and eliminating the poor behaviors, you want to be consistent, constant. You need to always watch your dog because they are master manipulators.
They are.
Is she in the bathroom yet? Okay. Okay, good. You know, so.
Jay also had another question, Dara. He has a cat as well that comes into this whole equation. And he says that the cat and the dog get along fine, but whenever the cat makes a sudden move, mm-hmm. the dog reacts
right.
and starts to go at it. And he's wondering, how does he stop the dog from reacting to the cat?
Well, it's just like what Dave was saying about self-restraint and teaching the dog some self-restraint, even like with food or even using a doggy flirt pole. First, you got to teach it a command, you know, the stay or the sit or the down, and then expose the stimuli based on the dog's sensitivity level and personality. So you might not do it right immediately in front of him, but you might do something at a distance to wave something and have him stay and reward him for him staying there and then getting closer to the stimuli and then making it more, you know, what's that word?
Exciting.
Yeah. Build upon it.
And as Dara mentioned, one of the things that I always recommend when we are working on teaching our dog not to chase the cat is let's put our dog on a leash so that we prevent them from successfully chasing after the cat while we're working on it. So we're going to put the dog on the leash. We're going to have a boiled chicken as a tasty, tasty treat. And then we're going to have the cat come into the room and we're going to reward the dog for sitting, for laying down, for ignoring the cat behaviors that elicit that. And by doing so, we'll also start to teach the cat to trust that we are going to prevent the dog from misbehaving. Because oftentimes cats run because they get scared or startled. And so they are learning to run away from the dog. And unfortunately, that just encourages the dog to chase after them. So by teaching our dog to be calm, we are also teaching our cat that they can be calm around the dog, which reduces the problematic behavior that the cat is doing, which is running away. And so we can actually do a combination of training for both our dog and our cat simultaneously to help to teach both of them to be more comfortable and more polite around each other.
Another thing with cats that we've discovered really helps is, first of all, give your cat lots of places to escape to. That helps them feel safer right from the get-go. But also, as Nick was saying, get yourself some tasty bits of food or a favorite toy. Ideally, food would be better in this situation. And you can even change what the appearance of the cat means to the dog. Every time the cat walks into the room, you can go, "Cat, yes!" And suddenly the chicken appears. After a while, the cat comes into the room and the dog comes flying to you and goes, "Hey, do you see that? Where's my chicken?" And you can also use the cat in the room as an opportunity to practice calling your dog. Mm-hmm. Can you come away from a cat who's sitting there? Can you come away from a cat who's walking? Can you come away from a cat who's just started to run away? And really build up that practice of coming off of the cat so that when the cat does run and the dog isn't on a leash, you can actually call your dog away because you've had so much practice in that particular environment with really good and tasty rewards.
Let's talk to Tom. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a sister who's got a little chihuahua and a cat as well. And I think the dog is undertrained, maybe. That's too strong of a word. But she tells me that her dog thinks he's a cat because he'll only eat cat food. And I tried to explain to her if she put the cat food on the counter and only fed him dry food, that eventually, when he's hungry, he will eat. But she just kind of lets the dog run all over her, and it does whatever it wants. And like when she drives in the car, it wants to sit on the back of her neck.
So the dog rules the roost. It sounds like.
Absolutely.
Dave, do you have any advice there, Dave?
And a sweet cat.
Yeah, Dave, what do you think?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, dogs should be dogs, and they do need some boundaries set, some general kind of expectations, things like that. Sometimes it can be kind of hard if they are used to just running around everywhere, and we're kind of teaching them that they do have less control. And so we're teaching them what we want them to be doing. So if this owner wants her dog to kind of be more dog-like. We do want we want to teach the dog how to be a dog in a sense. So things like, yes, I would say with like eating the cat food, I would put the cat food up high somewhere where the cat can eat the food in peace, and then have the dog where it is eating its appropriate dog food, because they will eventually eat their dog food.
Mm-hmm. Nell, did you have something to say on this one?
Yeah, I wanted to add a couple things. First of all, given the way the dog drives in the car, it's good it's not a Newfoundland.
Is there a safe way for a dog to ride in a car? I mean,
a crate or a safety harness.
Okay.
And there's only actually one safety harness that's been tested as far as we know. That's the Clickit Utility safety harness. Mm-hmm. But we're getting off target there. As far as the food goes, cats are notoriously much more pickier than dogs. So their food tastes better. And what dog isn't going to go for tastier food, right? We actually use cat food in training a lot because it's got a lot of flavor for dogs. So what I might try is, A, getting different samples of dog foods and trying them out and seeing what your dog likes best, because you don't want a dog who doesn't like his food. What fun is that for the dog? And then you can't use it in training. You can also take the food that you're feeding and wet it down with some broth or mix it in with some canned food to make it more palatable. There's nothing wrong with doing that long term. It doesn't hurt the dog. Make sure your broth is low sodium. But making the dog food more palatable is going to be, you know, your dog's then going to want to eat their own food, which is obviously much healthier for the dog.
Yeah, oftentimes with small breeds of dog, especially Chihuahuas, they often do become almost kind of cat-like. And I think that that's partially the breed, but it's also, I think, has to do with what we do with our dogs. There is a lot that we allow our smaller dogs to do and get away with or even encourage that we would never dream of doing with any other dog. I have had my St. Bernards in my car, and when the caller was describing letting the dog kind of like on the back of the neck, like that's very dangerous if we have anything that's anything larger. And so teaching our dogs to be a dog in terms of, well, let's actually teach the dog to behave in more dog-like ways, and let's discourage letting the dog eat the cat food. A big point for me on that would be it's not going to be nutritionally balanced for the dog on a long-term basis. But teaching our dogs to be dogs is a really good thing that we always want to encourage.
513-419-7100, and let's talk to Daryl. Good afternoon, Daryl.
Hey, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. Love the show. Ironically, I was trying to get my dog to come to me after she had done her business on the pad, as she was supposed to. When I was listening to the radio station, and you said you were going to have this show on puppy training. She's about 2.5 months old, and Layla is a mixed breed of some sort of or another, and some people have said, oh, she looks like a Papillon. Other people have said some sort of a toy border collie, but she was sold to us as a Shih-Pu. However, she's not a Shih-Pu. her ears and so on pretty much tell us that. But be that as it may, we've fallen very much in love with her, and my main question is, first of all, how important would it be for us to find out exactly what breed she is? And secondly, are there some little nuances about training particular breeds that apply to them that don't apply to others? Your guest just mentioned that in passing, but say a little more about that.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. So different breeds of dog do learn a little bit differently in terms of how they are going to respond to different kinds of stimuli. Now, knowing the exact breed makeup of your dog isn't going to necessarily give you like the instruction manual to that breed of dog. But it can help you to kind of maybe find what are going to be more appropriate or better outlets for specific activities or behaviors. So, for example, if we have a terrier, they are going to have a lot of impulses that we need to teach them to learn how to control. They're going to maybe be a little bit more energetic, whereas if we have maybe a larger breed dog that's going to be a little bit calmer, we may not need to worry about those kinds of things. So So the breed of dog does impact the behavior that we have in front of us, but it's not going to make a huge difference. And what you're going to find as you and your dog grow together is you're going to be able to find out what are the specific things that your dog likes. Because although we can take a lot of cues from learning what is the breed of our dog, we certainly always want to look at what is the individual dog in front of us and what can we do to help them to best succeed. And if you need any help with that, contact a trainer for more guidance.
Nick, how do you know when you can handle it on your own or when it's time to find somebody to help you on that professional level?
That's a really great question. So very simply put, I tend to be pretty data-driven with the training that I do with dogs. And so when a client calls me and they said, well, I've been trying this and I've been trying that and I'm still having the issue, well, then it's going to be a good time to contact a trainer for help. Because if you've been trying something and you're not seeing the results that you want, you're not getting the success that you need, then contacting a professional trainer is going to be really, really helpful in making that a much more efficient process. I have a lot of clients who will come to me after months or even years of dealing with behavioral issues that they tried to tackle all on their own, and they were just not successful. And I've had clients where literally after just two sessions, we saw dramatic differences. This is what we all do for a living. Many of us travel all around the country and even the world, attending conferences and seminars, obtaining certifications, so that we can bring all of this vast knowledge to our clients and tell them what's going to be the most efficient way. There are so many different approaches to training and all these different ways that we can approach a specific issue. There are literally dozens upon dozens, if not more, ways to approach a single issue. And when you contact a professional trainer, they're going to be able to help you to find what one is actually going to be best for you. And if that one doesn't work, they're going to have 10 more ready and willing to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything that Nick said. I want to add, when it comes to different breeds of dogs, there's a myth out there that different breeds of dogs need to be trained differently. And learning theory is learning theory. You know, the science behind learning is the same for every creature, including dogs and fish and, you know, people. So you might not necessarily have to train two dogs completely differently, but what will change is what motivates each individual dog. So you have to look at your dog and say what motivates you, not what do I think should motivate you or what the books say should motivate you, but what really motivates you. And you can tweak so many things within that learning paradigm, you know, but still stay on the same, you know, in the same theories. Like you might use, you might be able to progress faster with one breed of dog than another. You know, you might be able to use fewer treats and more toys with one dog over another. But generally, just because you have a certain breed of dog doesn't mean they have to learn something one particular way.
Very true.
I'd like to get Monica's call in here before we go to the break. And hi, Monica. Go right ahead.
Hi, great conversation. My parents have an adorable little rescue that was a stray for about 3 months, we think, when we found her. And she has earned the unfortunate nickname of Bitey Dog.
Oh, no.
For obvious reasons, because, and not just like a little nip, like she really bites hard in certain situations, but then is like instantly remorseful. So she's not a mean dog. Mostly it's around food and security. Like if we drop something on the floor and reach for it, no matter what it is, that's a trigger for her. And I know there's mixed opinions about if a dog has kind of an innate nature to bite, that whether that can be trained out or not. And I'd like to hear your opinion. And I suspect training for the owners is just as important as training for a dog in this situation.
Okay. We'll start with Mel here on this.
Well, it sounds like what you're having is some resource guarding behavior. In other words, the dog has something or there's something the dog wants, and they're going to protect their access to that item. And there's, when it comes to dealing with issues like this, the first thing is I'm going to suggest is to contact a professional. When it comes to behavior problems that include aggression or biting, when you involve a professional, you're going to see a lot quicker results, and it's going ideally going to happen with a lot less risk. And with resource guarding, what we want to do is change the way the dog feels about people being near their resource. They bite because they think you're a threat, you're a competitor. But if we teach them that when we approach your stuff, awesomeness happens. Mm-hmm. After a while, they're like, please come approach my stuff. And we can change their attitude towards that. And that doesn't just put a Band-Aid over the problem. It actually fixes the core emotional reaction the dog is having. And this leads to permanent fixes as long as you can continue the work. I mean, each dog is different and some dogs are a lot harder than others. But I definitely, definitely advise contacting a professional to help with this.
And Dara and Nick, hang on to those thoughts. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll get your thoughts on the bitey dog here. So this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and you can join us with your questions at 513-419-7100.
Support comes from Ohio Living Landfair, a masterpiece living community offering a rehab center with all private suites for those recovering from illness, injury, or surgery. Ohio Living Landfair offers licensed therapists providing comprehensive rehabilitation services. You can discover more about Ohio Living Landfair online at ohioliving.org.
Support comes from independent Medicare health insurance agent Daryl Dick. His mission is to help you understand your Medicare insurance options with unbiased and independent guidance. People who are already Medicare eligible or about to become Medicare eligible can reach Daryl at 884-1919 or MedicareInsuranceHelper.com.
Support is provided by Women Writing for a Change, offering classes which encourage creative self-expression through the art of writing. Winter classes for adults begin in January with samplers on January 3rd and 8th. Discover the power of writing in a supportive community. More information at womenwriting.org.
Support comes from Ollie at UC, where adults over 50 gather to learn new things, meet new friends, and enrich their lives. Nearly 200 exciting classes. A college degree is not required. For online catalogs and details, you can search OLLI Cincinnati on the web. Classes begin February 5th.
Support for WVXU local programming comes from the Murray and Agnes Season Good Good Government Foundation, helping all public-spirited citizens in the ongoing quest to create good local government.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about dog training with Paws, Look, Listen owner Nick Hoff, Training Tracks co-owner Melissa Bussey-Silverman, Dog Abilities owner Day Groden, and Underdog Canine Academy owner Dara Williams. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dara and Nick, you wanted to weigh in on bitey dogs, so Dara, go right ahead.
Just a couple of things that I would say is that when it comes to resource guarding with food, I like the dog to see me as the food source versus the bowl or the floor as a food source. So I like to put the food in the bowl and then feed the dog versus just dumping the food in the bowl. Also, hand feeding the dog can help the situation as well. Okay. Those are my just two little additions.
So you had asked earlier, when is going to be the best time to contact a trainer? And I just wanted to reemphasize what Mel was saying, where if you have a dog who is biting or showing any signs of aggressive behavior, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you contact a professional, not just for the health and safety of your dog and your family, but also there's a lot of liability that can be involved there. And then specifically with resource guarding issues, making sure that you are working with an appropriate person who can help to address what the motivation is behind that issue and how can you help to change that. Resource guarding is an incredibly common issue. And I tell most of my clients that every single dog has it for the most part. It's more of just a question of under what circumstance might we see it. And so a lot of people won't see it. But if you give your dog a ham bone during Christmas and they're underneath the coffee table chewing that and there are three children crawling towards them, you're going to see that behavior come out. And so making sure that you are protecting everyone in the household. So again, going back to management, we want to make sure that you're not allowing the dog to practice this every single day. So if you have a dog who does become protective over resources, don't let people walk over to the dog while they have that. Feed your dog in a separate room. Keep people away during that time. And then again, contact a professional who can help help you. I cannot emphasize that enough. And this is something that responds incredibly well to training. I work a lot with this issue, and the success rate is phenomenal when we have clients who follow through with it. It works out so, so well.
Let's take a call from Margaret at 513-419-7100. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I have a Shih Tzu Yorkie mix. She was found, and I believe she's probably about 5 or 6 years old. Sweet dog. I've had her now for about 4 years. I cannot get her to play with any toys, and I can't get her to fetch anything. And so how do I train my dog to play fetch or play with toys?
Day, you want to start us off on that one?
Sure. So I would look at first, I want to look at what are the motivations your dog does have. If your dog eats, they're probably going to like food. And there are some actual really cool toys that you can make. You can add the food into the toys. There's one specifically I know that looks like a ball, and it's Velcro, and you put food in it. And so we can toss that and then have the dog, you know, sniff around, get it, and then really encourage them to bring it back. I mean, that's one way. Other things that might be motivating for your dog would be just like something like a flirt pole, if you're not familiar with that. It's kind of like a big cat toy. And we put a dog toy in the end, and we use actually their movement to make it kind of exciting for them. And then we really reward them when they go after that. Each dog is a little different, I think. And so, you know, we can try to encourage the play, and we want them to actually play. And it doesn't always have to be in the form of fetch. I mean, it can be just learning to really play with you and making it where you're really exciting, playing chase games, hiding food around you, having your dog find the food on you can be a great game. I would look at things like that, too, besides just having or wanting the dog to just play fetch.
Mel, any thoughts on this?
Well, there are a lot of dogs that just don't fetch naturally. And they can be taught to fetch, but it's a bit of a challenge.
So it may not be that big of a deal if the dog doesn't
fetch.
Right.
What you want to do is find out what the dog enjoys and play with the dog with whatever they like. Like Day talked about personal play. Personal play is so amazing because if you and the dog can come up with a routine that the dog thinks is just boatloads of fun— There's no calories. You have it everywhere you go. It's not food, so you can use it everywhere. Personal play is fantastic. It can involve tug or just you running around and getting silly on the floor, you know. And that's one thing with dogs is they encourage us to get silly. And I think they're good for us in that way.
Dara?
Sometimes we don't even play with the toys that we want them to play with. So if we even play with the toys and make it so much fun, they're like, what's going on over there? You know, what are you doing?
Lead by example.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay.
And then, like, I'll even throw the ball and I'll go chase the ball and I'll go get it. And then, you know, like, just make it really exciting. And then they're like, oh, what are you doing? I want to do that, right? And then even, like, with the whole recall thing, bringing the ball back and stuff like that, I'll say, bring it, bring it, bring it, and I'll start running away. And they'll start bringing the toy back. So it's there's various ways you can do that. But you got to be exciting.
Yeah.
You
gotta. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like being a good leader for your dog is an important thing. Being a good role model
right.
for your dog.
A benevolent
solves
leader.
Solves a lot of problems. Let's talk to Roger. Hi, Roger.
Hey, my first question was about discipline, but I think you've already covered that. But since I was here, I want to know if I let my dog out in the backyard and it does its business all over the backyard, how can I train it to use one area of the backyard?
So that's a really good question. The way that I recommend teaching your dog to go to a specific spot, unfortunately, it's a poor time to choose to do that now because I'm going to recommend you put your dog on the leash and walk them outside to that area that you'd like to. So you might want to wait till the spring to start teaching this. But you take your dog to the same spot where you'd like them to do their business. You take them there on the leash so that you prevent them from just wandering off and go with them there. Bring some treats with you so that the moment that your dog starts to go to the bathroom where you'd like them to, praise them quietly for doing so. And then right after they finish, you can give them a treat for doing so. And then afterwards, you can then unclip the leash and let your dog run around and have some fun after that. Now, this is going to take a lot of consistency and repetition. But if you do that every single time, your dog's going to learn to go to the same exact spot, especially if they also learn, well, okay, so I can go anywhere in the yard and potty. But if I potty specifically under this tree, Dad gives me a piece of liver. That's going to be a nice trade. I guess I can do that for you.
Yeah, kind of along the same lines. My new dog likes to dig. So my backyard's not going to last very long if she keeps this up. And she keeps digging out from under the fence and escaping. So how do I get Dolly to stop digging? Day, I mean, what's a good tactic for getting her to change her behavior?
Well, we talked about this just a little bit since I have terriers as well. But I do think, you know, you do have to try to do as much prevention and access as possible with that. But I also think creating an actual place for your dog to dig. So something like a sand pit, you know, there's various surfaces that you can put in that your dog may like. And then I'm going to put like yummy stuff in there that my dog might want to dig out. You said your dog was kind of treat motivated.
So, oh, yeah.
I would put some treats in there. And then as soon as I saw the dog, you know, doing a little bit of scratching, I would be really like praising her and encouraging that because that's what I want. And I put just little things that she really likes in there, you know, so it becomes a surprise. Okay, and then I'm going to lead her to that spot.
So she learns that it's okay to dig in this one spot, but not anyplace else.
Right. Okay. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can always also teach your dog a leave it. So if they start digging in one hole, you can say leave it, and then you teach them a cue for going to their own box and go with them, and then just go nuts with praise and treats when they start digging, and they're going to be like, wait a minute, I'm digging and you're praising me? What's happening here? And then every time you catch them digging somewhere else, you can go run with them to their digging box.
Well, we were talking about leading by example. Should I dig with the dog?
Exactly. if you and your dog like to do things together, a lot of dogs are like, that's really cool. Look at Dad. He's digging. I'm going to dig too. And it can be really rewarding for some dogs to watch you doing those things.
And actually, just to piggyback on the leading by example, you may want to be careful about that too. So, for example, I have had some clients have problems that when they are gardening in their yard, their dog comes over and starts digging because they are following your example. So it may be a good idea to make sure that your dog is inside when you are digging and you don't want your dog to participate with you.
Let's talk to Joey. Hi, Joey.
Hi there. I got a 6-month-old Weimaraner puppy, my girlfriend and I do, and she has this issue. She gets very anxious whenever one of us leaves through the front door. She'll whine, she'll jump up on things, she'll look out the window, she'll pace a lot, and it takes several minutes to get her to calm down to the point where one of us will take her upstairs so that the person can leave out the front door, even if we're just leaving for just a minute and coming right back. So you guys have any advice for how to help her get used to us leaving and coming back without having such an issue?
Okay, we'll let Nick lead the way on this one, Nick.
Sure. So it sounds like what your dog is experiencing a little bit of is some separation anxiety. And this is something that I actually did a course last year to become a certified separation anxiety trainer. And so usually one of the very first things that we need to do is we need to start to desensitizing our dog to the process of us leaving out the door. So, for example, I would practice doing some of the common things that I would do before leaving the house. So I'm going to stand up and I'm going to put my shoes on. But instead of then doing everything else, I'm going to then sit down and relax. So initially, your dog will probably become a little bit concerned, a little bit anxious by that, but then they'll be able to settle back down. Then I'm going to go over and pick up my keys. Again, my dog's going to get a little worked up, but then when I don't leave, they're going to settle back down. I'll take my shoes off, and I can repeat this process. And then I can break this down into little steps if I need to. So I can do this where I walk over, touch the doorknob, but then just walk back in and sit down, where I walk up, unlock the door, step out for just a moment, come back in. And so we can break down this process of actually leaving into smaller steps and desensitizing, in the true sense, our dogs to that separation. Now, if this is also happening when another one of the owners is home, the other owner can help to distract their dog a little bit as well. So you can also maybe practice this as a sit-stay command, for example, where one owner is practicing a sit-stay, and we're actually using the distraction of the other person exiting as a distraction to help the dog, and we'll be kind of doing some dual training there as well.
Dara?
I was just going to – Nick did.
He hit it all. Yeah, I'm like, okay. Well, we can move on to the next caller.
This is what I do.
Well, I mean, and then you just want to extend the process where mm-hmm. the person's, you know, gone for a little longer at each time and stuff like that, where the dog is seemingly okay. And it's also, you should really pay attention to the relationship. You want to make sure that you're not creating codependence in your dog and having more of an interdependent relationship. He should be able to hold his own without your presence. So we want to just definitely pay attention to whether we're creating an interdependent relationship or a codependent relationship.
Okay, and we have got Gary on the line here, and let's see what Gary's question is. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Yeah, I have a Yorkie puppy. My daughter has a Yorkie that had such a sweet, calm disposition, unusually so for a Yorkie, we mated her and we got two puppies out of litter. My daughter kept one and I got one as well. When we had the puppy alone, it was making progress in terms of learning and learning to come and that sort of thing. And then over the holidays, while they've been here, it's like they've unlearned everything. There's too much stimulation and it's kind of back to square one. And it's kind of a, we're going to be in a situation once she graduates, the dogs are going to move back to three dogs for a year after she graduates. And it seems like a real challenge to try to train three dogs at a time, and we need some sort of a coordinated effort. The dogs tend to come more for my wife and her daughter than me, largely because they give them treats and reward them constantly. And I'll try to do the same thing, but I'm kind of thinking there's got to be more to it than just this, because it's also a safety issue. If they bolt for the street or something like that, you want them to stop.
And Gary, we're quickly running out of time, so I want to get to the panel here.
Any tips you can give me would be great.
Okay.
Sure. So whenever we're dealing with multi-dog households, we want to make sure that we focus in on each dog individually first. So teach each dog what you want them to do in that situation. And then once they're doing that, you can start putting them together. But that's going to increase your success.
Okay.
And I agree.
Yes, exactly.
What Nick said exactly. Just put one dog up while you train the other. It sounds like you've got some time before the dogs are living together again. So both dogs should be getting a lot of training during this time so that you can more seamlessly put them into the same household again.
And just a general rule on training for anything that you want to do, keep training sessions short with your dog. Outside of working with a professional trainer during those sessions that you meet with them, keep training short, 2 to 5 minutes at a time. So put one dog up for 5 minutes, work with the other dog, then swap. It's great to do during feeding time as well.
Dara, Nick, Mel, and Day, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Thanks for all the calls and all the good questions today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pause, Look, Listen owner Nick Hoff, Training Tracks co-owner Melissa Bussey-Silverman, Dog Abilities owner Day Groden, and Underdog Canine Academy owner Dara Williams. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Elstrow was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. For the past two decades, Israeli violin maker Amnon Weinstein has been dedicated to restoring violins played by musicians during the Holocaust. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll hear about an upcoming concert featuring 9 of these instruments, Violins of Hope. We'll also talk with Dr. Tracy Weiland about the impact technology has on our lives. She'll share her 10 digital disruptor predictions for 2018. That's Thursday afternoon on Cincinnati Edition at 1 o'clock on 91.7 WVXU.